Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to City Alpha 3, a Star Trek podcast here on the Nerd Party Network. I am your host this week, Daniel Prue, and joining me, as always, my two co-hosts. I guess we'll call you Benedict, Darren, and Stab in the Back, Philip. Because, gentlemen, you went on an away mission without me this week, and I think that's a little unfair.
Well, I mean, away mission in the ship, so it wasn't really an away mission.
I mean, it was Darren's birthday. Oh. So, I mean, yeah.
And that we was, purposely was didn't sing the copyrighted song. We sang the Jolly Good Fellow version, because that's what you got to do.
Yeah, we played a Star Trek Bridge Crew.
Yep. Project Bridge Crew.
You played the VR version, so I could actually see your arms.
My arms were waving like spaghetti noodles.
And I was PC, so I'm just very clear. But anyway, yep. So yeah, fun times, man. We could have used a third, but what can you do?
Well, we'll talk about that in the future, though. We have some plans for that. But I'm glad you guys enjoyed it. Anything else went on this week, Star Trek related in your lives, or anything else exciting going on?
I've just been listening to some mission log. That's been enjoyable and makes me want to kind of do a little bit of a DS9 rewatch, maybe jump in mid season 4 or 5 or so, but maybe I'll start with Alla Moraine and count to 4. Not sure yet, but yeah, no, I think it's time for a little more rewatching and yeah, just enjoying these episodes, because especially DS9, there's a lot of great character stuff going on there.
I had an eBay purchase come in the other day. It was my phaser holster.
Ooh.
Because, you know, for those who cosplay Starfleet uniforms, you know, for your away team, you got to have your tricorder holster, phaser holster, and then, like, the old, I say old now, right? Old Playmates phaser has a little clip on it, which technically, I suppose, can fit on your belt, which I've done before, but, you know, come on, you need the holster. So, you know, 3D printing, God bless it, has sort of been like a boon to my Star Trek fandom, because I've, you know, shown a lot of the toys I get from action figures that are all 3D printed with Triple Fiction Productions. This is a 3D printed phaser holster with complete with phaser. That's, I mean, it's not a, you know, it's 3D printed, so it's just regular, no lights or anything or buttons. But anyway,
does it have any magnets in it to like help it seat inside the holster, or
it just grips in pretty
just
well?
Friction.
Just friction. Yeah, because there's like kind of two grips on it, and so excuse me. But they also, the person who did it, I forget, also makes a tricorder holder complete with. I got my tricorder. As a tricorder, so that's not that I'm going to any conventions anytime soon, or, you know, wearing pants on calls when I'm wearing a Starfleet uniform. But, you know, whenever I do again, it's cool to have this.
Well, because weren't you just promoted? Did we talk about that?
Yeah, in the Starfleet, and I'm, you know, on the SFI, Starfleet
International. I think.
I was like, what's the F? Fleet, sorry. Starfleet International Star Trek Fan Club. To full commander. I'm XO of my chapter, the USS Bonaventure, which I have my little Bonaventure model here from Eagle Moss. So yeah. That's,
well, congratulations on your promotion, Philip, and I hope that pip doesn't feel too heavy for you.
No, I mean, I got the beard for it now. So
it's one more thing to take off when he goes rogue and, you know, sets it down with the extreme force on the glass table.
Of course, now that I'm XO, now I have to do crew evaluation.
You just slip back into your dungeon master role when we would play, and you already have the authoritative talking down. You'll be a natural.
Well, we've teased it enough, I think. So we're gonna be talking. So in the world of Star Trek. Where's
the universe?
Star Trek universe.
Have you seen the logo?
A universe, in fact. We are apparently barreling straight towards, and we weren't sure of when this was going to happen, but now it's
the nexus of shows is sweeping through.
So yeah, the Star Trek Lower Decks is coming out August. I believe, is it 12th?
12th? 6th.
6th. Okay. Thank you. Literally 3 weeks away. So we are ready, I hope. Hope you're buckled in. We got a full trailer, and
we did.
I enjoyed the trailer. I don't know, what did you guys think? I thought it's fun, and it's definitely a kind of different, which is what we were expecting, and lighthearted. So checking all the right boxes, I guess.
I like how it's firmly rooted in TNG. Like the uniforms are TNG, the holodeck is TNG, the corridors are TNG. Like it feels, which I think is smart, rather than like. Now it's a new ship and a new, you know, style. Like, we're used to that. So I really liked that. I'm still learning all their names, but the dweebly, snivelly red shirt.
The main
guy.
Character?
Yeah, sure. Would you say that? He's not the biggest one on the poster, so
would,
I don't think
would
he's
you say
the
he's the Lavelle, maybe, of the
yeah,
of the group?
I'm not sure, but he's going to take a while to grow on me because he's kind of one of those... I don't know.
Tilly.
He's, but I'm fine with silly. It's
no,
just,
Tilly.
Tilly. That's true. I hadn't thought of that, where it's like a supreme lack of confidence in oneself, but is in Starfleet, which kind of doesn't make sense. So
Barkley.
That's true. Okay. I'm just saying it's got to grow on me a little bit. All the other characters I really like, you know, and it's going to be interesting. It's very much a... it's obviously not school, but you feel that divide between like the bridge officers who get all the cool missions and, you know, like ripped beyond belief, you know, carrying like 8 people on top of themselves and, you know, the junior crew. So I think it's going to be fun. Like you said,
you alluded to this earlier. It reminds me of when you have people playing junior officers in a separate mission away from the senior officers, and you're the DM of this group, and you have the people going, blast shield up, blast shield down, blast shield, like, come on, people, stop rolling blast shield.
Let's order a Cardassian sunrise in the middle of the Dominion War.
I was waiting.
What was your phaser set on when you fired that? Can you tell me?
It was stun. Totally set on stun. That's true. It's literally, now that I see it now, the show is literally them playing the Star Trek RPG game, but animating it.
To your point, Darren, about the TNG feel, this is a direct quote from Mike McMahon, and I think that's how you say his last name, the showrunner. He says, it takes place in 2380, right after Nemesis. I am a TNG guy. So he is absolutely trying to get that feel down. So this will be interesting.
Smart. You don't have to rebuild the look, you know, just keep it simple.
Well, we know that they changed. They only had the grays not very long, right, at this point, because it was...
Oh, that's true.
It was
that's true.
First contact to Nemesis, essentially. And then right after that, they got...
Now we're going... They're going retro back to the TNG, but with the silver stripe. Yeah, is so. Basic, and the boots.
So anyways, we got our first look at that. We got the ship, too, and it seems to be the most controversial part, other than the... nudity, I guess, which is so stupid I'm not even gonna comment on it.
The black box generator nudity.
Yeah, who cares? Who cares? It's a cartoon, people. Let's get over it. The ship. So there seems to be a
the Cerritos.
Yeah, we talked, I think, a little bit about it before, but we'll just talk about it because we've seen it in action now, and it still doesn't make any sense to me how it works. But...
Look, when a Daddy Bozeman and a Mama Obrith get together, you get the Cerritos. No. Yeah, it's growing on me. I think seeing it in other angles and actually flying around versus just that 3/4 profile view, I think helped.
Look, there's a Dominion War going on. We just needed any ship that we had.
Utopia
Planitia
was in flames, guys. They just pieces and you put it together.
Anything, yep. And they slapped a label on it. And
they're selling it. They're selling it. that's pretty much what they did. It's growing on me. I like the little Easter eggs when they're looking at the Master System display. You have like the Argo and, you know, some other cool things. But I think it'll be fun. And I think we've learned more about the name, where the name came from.
It's just confirmation that it is essentially meaningless. Yeah, it's just a joke.
Right. Well, it's a little meaning of that it's a California-class ship, so all of the ships have named after California cities.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't hear about that. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So it's Yeah, California class. So they're all named after cities, and Cerritos is, it's like nothing. It's like a city. It's, and that's where it's funny. I'm like, I know it about the jingle for like the Cerritos Auto Square because it has like an auto mall, and that's all I know about Cerritos. So
it's the kind of name you give a ship before you rename it the Enterprise or the Defiant.
Right before it goes into a service, like the day before, even though you have all these plans.
It's the Sal Powell of you know, of shit. But yeah, that's the joke.
Town.
It's like, of all the beautiful names in California, that's the one that they got. So okay. That made more sense once you had the context a little bit.
Interesting. Do you think we'll see in the series at some point? Do you think we'll see the USS California?
Maybe. I mean, I would assume we would see other ships like Los Angeles or, you know, San Francisco.
I assume its sister ship is the Barstow.
The Barstow. Wow. Yeah. Barstow's in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. I mean, they could have picked worse names, but not by much.
Well, anyway.
U.S. is Victorville.
So, believe it or not, we're not here to talk about Lord X. We are. But no,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Tell us about that. Yeah, because I had to do a quick refresh via Memory Alpha, Daniel, because all you said was, we're talking Lower Decks. And I thought, oh, well, the trailer just dropped, so we must be talking about the new animated show.
Well, we did a little bit. So there, you know, tick that box off. But we talked, like I said, my Mike McMahon, big TNG fan, and he named the series, essentially, not in, like, as it's more of a, I guess you'd say it was an homage because he loves this episode so much.
Reference to, or
yeah. He says it's his favorite episode, and this is also my favorite episode. So I thought, what better excuse do we need to actually watch Lower Decks? Because I love this episode so much, and we'll just spend a half hour.
And congratulations, Lower Decks! Your article has evolved and graduated to episode
disambiguation.
Or no, just now it's Lower Decks the episode rather than Lower Decks the show, which, you know, now we got to clarify.
Lower Decks the series.
Yeah, then click here. Would you like to know more?
So we will be talking about Lower Decks the show, obviously, when it comes out. I actually have no idea. Do you guys know what the release schedule looks like for that?
It's every Thursday, 10 episodes.
I did look up the episode list, and all it is episode 1, episode 2, episode 3. So we don't know any titles yet or anything. I imagine.
Need title.
Probably they'll stick away. I hope. I think maybe they'll stay away from the Latin stuff for the cartoon.
Will they?
But I guess we'll see. But anyways, yeah, so let's talk about, and I had you guys rewatch, because I love this episode, Lower Decks. And we're not going to go through this chronologically. We're just going to talk about how awesome it is. So,
well, and a very late episode. I mean, it's season 7, episode 15, so it's almost the very end of TNG. And like you said, it's your favorite. It's a very highly regarded episode.
And I'll admit, you know, because I know the episode, obviously, but I think watching it again, I liked it even more. I mean, because yeah. I don't think I wasn't like you. I would have never named it favorite episode or like top 10. But I watched it again. I was like, that's really good. A lot of heart to it. I mean, not just the obvious storyline of, you know, everyone's now new favorite Bajoran, but yeah, all of it yeah. really. Was
it's just a, being something and different and not being the same, you know, but it's kind of TNG safe different versus like DS9, we're going to change it up different.
Yeah, it's that's why I love it the most, I think, is because I can speak for you guys, but you can tell me if I'm wrong. But I, as a fan, a TNG fan, love to think about what my life would be like on the ship, what life on that ship would be like. And we get little slices of it here and there, but this is like the only episode, really, that goes into all new characters, which is a big gamble, obviously.
Except for Ogawa. A lot of new characters.
And of course, Sito. We've seen Sito, but as a... this is her first recurring, and obviously only recurring, but like.
And she had the same name, which is weird for someone. Yeah.
We thought they all changed their name after that.
And Ben, we get Ben, so we get a lot of new characters.
Yeah, it's really good stuff. I mean, I love every aspect of it, but I mean, like, we're dealing with a little bit of serialization here with the Sito stuff. We're getting some new characters, and they're all at least somewhat interesting, and it does. Show like a typical like Enterprise adventure from a very different perspective, and I've forgotten how well that plays until I rewatched it again, because like you're like, oh my god, I have no idea what's going on Like, I knew what was going on.
Almost like you're in the holodeck during a Borg attack. What would that be like?
But you're like, oh, what is this thing that we're beaming aboard? Like, you see that they have no idea. Like, yeah. They're just standing in engineering.
They're
like,
not privy to that information. It's above their, was it pay grade? What is it?
Yeah, well, I mean, and of course, this is the whole concept of the series, Lower Decks. But, like, how interesting it can be not to show the whole story. Just to have the Lower Deck version, which, I mean, I like how we say that, but it comes from this episode. This episode gives us that language, a Lower Deck episode.
It's the longest backdoor pilot delay that we've ever seen from, what is it, February 7th, 1994 to August 6th, 2020.
But yeah, because you get the snippets, you get all the perspectives, you get the companion to our main characters, you know, you get a pairing with Geordi, a pairing with Worf, a pairing with Riker, a pairing with Beverly, you know, everyone has their little sort of mentors or supervisors, and so it's Captain Picard even, and so plays out there.
Well, and that's an interesting direction, because, yeah, like you said, they do pair, because at the end of it every day, a Star Trek episode needs to be about the main characters, otherwise it's not a Star Trek episode. But they, you know, it's also different in the fact that really the main characters of this episode are not our regulars. They're the Lower Deck crew and how they interact with those that we know. And by, yeah, not revealing, you know, there's no, I mean, their mission, quote unquote, briefing is, you know, the poker game or around the table in 10 forward. They don't have the, you know, what's the word?
Observation.
Yeah, they don't have an observation lounge moment where it's like, well, here's the mission. It's like they're just piecing together the pieces, and it's a little bit of a mystery. And, you know, not that they're going to all mutiny over it. You know, that's not that deep. But, yeah, it shows it's Lower Decks. It's lower crewmen. They aren't privy to all the information that they, but they have what they need to do their jobs, and, you know, and they do.
Like when Cito's out guarding the sick bay, and she's just like, I was told not to let anybody in. That's all I know. And it's like, yeah, I guess that's kind of how it would be. Like, you don't have time to sit down with everybody in the middle of a situation. Like, oh, hey, we're getting really close to the Cardassian border. Yeah. What's going on?
We need to get back to the general PA call of the Kirk era. I mean, he would just be like, boop, you know, push the button on his console and be like, attention, everyone. We're now heading into Cardassian space.
Buckle, you know, one up. Thing that I always thought about, too, just kind of along those same lines, like, if the ship just suddenly goes to red alert, like, and think of it from, like, Geordi's perspective.
Right.
Like, he has no idea whatever is going on. Like, unless, right. Does he have, like, a
when he's in engineering, you mean? Yeah.
Yes, yeah. When he's in engineering, like, does he have a feed to the bridge so he can kind of get an idea?
Or even just a feed of what's on the main view screen. You would think at a minimum they'd have a mirrored main view screen monitor in main engineering.
Yeah.
They don't have, like, the battle bridge recorder or...
At least on the bridge, when he's there, it's like a mirror, so he can look at it while he's working on the, you know, engineering station. I mean, it's reverse, which, you know, that's why the torpedo went wide,
like,
that one time. But
people have in their offices the little
mirrors.
Monitor.
Yeah, it's like Worf looks over him. He's like, "I'm working, Worf. I'm working. Trust me."
He has one that shows, like, the main view screen behind him and, like, the back of Picard's head.
Well, you know, he's got that kick switch underneath, so he can switch the screen back from Galaga to. Well, you know, we all have talked about the lack of security monitors and cameras in general in Star Trek, mostly because it's way more story driven to say, come on down, I have something to show you, then take a look at this feed and you can see it instantly from where you're sitting. But yeah, it's that, I think what you're saying, or what I'm hearing, Daniel, is like, yeah, it goes to red alert and you're like, okay, then I guess I'll go to my station. I have no idea what's going.
Like, do they just stand there until something breaks? And then you, I don't know.
Yeah, if you're on damage control, it's like, okay, I'm ready in case something. Damage. Oh, we got hit. I don't know who's shooting at us, but.
but I think that is sort of
something,
like,
that was going to burn up onto my attention yesterday.
That's sort of the secret of the. I mean, I don't say this in a bad way, but I mean, because we're not allowed to call it military, so I can't say militaristic. But the bureaucratic system, you just do your part.
Right.
You don't doesn't matter what's going on. So, like, red alert is you make sure the warp core is contained. You make sure this, X. That's your whole job.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if it's Romulans, Cardassians, alien beings, Q. Your job is to do this. That's all it is when it goes red alert.
Now I want to see a lower decks Q episode where, like, they're, so the upper decks have no idea what's going on. So the lower decks are just in complete disarray.
Yeah, but it's like this episode highlights it for me because... Like you say, Philip, you say just do what you're supposed to do. But in this episode, they're sitting in engineering trying to get the Cardassian, and Vorek or Torek or Zorak, whatever, he scans the thing with some useful information. He's like, I'm trying to figure out what kind of life form is in there so we can, you know, put some context around something.
Normal Starfleet 101.
And Geordi yells at him. He's like, no, don't do that, man. Like, you just do exactly what you're told. But it's like... That seems like a really bad like.
All the upper crew become micromanagers, which is not the Starfleet way.
Look, it gives you a reason to get that other pip on your collar there. So you... the use of secrecy is interesting. I mean, of course, it's not regular. This is happens to be a super secret squirrel mission. and you can argue what's the worst that could happen, you know. Oh yeah, there's a Cardassian aboard. Okay, and so what happens, you know? But
the more people that would know that, the more the mission would be jeopardized. So it's like they're not wrong for hiding.
Yeah,
it's just
theory. I mean, who are they going to tell?
No, that's a different episode. That's a different episode, Philip. This is Lower Decks,
Section 31. But anyway, I always like knowing the little things, details about, like you said, Daniel. So like apparently, ensigns get roommates. Lieutenants get their own room. So that was very interesting. So apparently. Vork needs a new roommate after this.
That definitely sounds about right on the Enterprise, at least, because you have all...
They got so much space, though. Like, a lot of space.
See, like, queuing up that video of the Enterprise D and how big it is.
Well, it could be a learning thing, right? Like, you just get out of the academy.
Yeah.
You know, you're...
So junior officers and mutineers all have to share...
Exactly.
Share space.
See, it'd be interesting. We've never seen... Maybe DS9, and that was more like the war episode. The enlisted crew. We don't see a lot of crewman perspectives. I mean, I know O'Brien's enlisted.
Yeah, but he's the chief. He's married. He's got the special married billet.
But it'd be interesting to see the crewman perspective, you know, not just the junior officer. So.
We don't even have like a really good idea of what that population is, though, do we? Like, enlisted versus officers. Like, we don't even... I don't even know. You would think that the crewmen would be a lot more. There would be more of them, but it doesn't seem to be the case. It seems to be the case.
In Star Trek, the way Star Trek presents in all series, is like it's a 90, and I'm making this like 90% officer, 10% enlisted, which of course in real life military, it's like 20% officer, 80% enlisted.
Right.
So it's just interesting.
You would think. Along those same lines, one of the things I do love about this episode, which of course is everything, is the Ben perspective, which we get to see
civilian.
All the civilian talk, and he's just like, whatever, I call.
Called him Will?
Called Will, it's no big deal. And it's like, you have people on this ship. I don't know, how does that work? Like, did they just sign a slip and then say, okay?
He just has the joy of being a waiter.
Yep.
What he wanted to do with his life.
Yeah, I mean, that starts to get into the bigger picture of Starfleet and, like, how do you...
have a service industry.
Yeah, service industry versus... Well, I mean, that's, again, one of the really big differences between Star Trek and Star Wars is Star Wars has droids. That's the... I mean, honestly, I think at the fundamental level, that is the biggest difference because droids fill that service niche that we don't see... In Star Trek, there's no equivalent where it's all people. So,
do you not remember the little flying things, the little floating ones? God, what are they called?
I refuse to ignore the droid. Oh, the exocomps.
Exocomps.
Well, hey, if you want an exocomp to serve you, special ale, then then go ahead. But. Yeah, but
Now, Darren, I feel like you're the perfect person to ask this. So, because you're our droid expert, if Ben was a droid, what kind of droid would he be?
Oh, he'd be a protocol droid for sure.
B3N, you mean?
Yeah, B3N. And he would, you know, something's wrong with his programming because he's calling him Will and he's showing up at the poker game. That's not what he's programmed for. He's programmed to serve drinks and make people happy.
That, I just want the Android checker, with the poker visor.
That checkerboard is painted on. That's always
I'm
on.
I'm going to say, though, honestly, like, this, his specific position doesn't bother me, even if he's just doing it. Like, he gets a free ride on this sweet ship, and he's going to different planets all the time. I can see that billing.
Is he?
I can see that being a fulfilling career for like a people person. Like, he's like, maybe he doesn't have any great aspirations to be whatever, captain of his own ship or whatever, but he could be like, I just wanted to see the universe, I wanted to meet new cultures all the time. Like, that could be his goal, and he's just really good with people. Like, I could see that kind of guy signing up to do that.
Well, he's the, and I'm not talking about him specifically or trying to make him lesser, but it's almost like the, like, very California thing, maybe anywhere, like a house guest. Because, like, I'll watch shows, and, like, people have house guests that, like, are there for a long, like, that's their life, I guess. I don't know what it's like to be like that. You're just a house guest. I don't know. But anyway, I mean, like, the infamous one is Cato Kaelin. But, like, I was watching an Unsolved Mysteries, the new one, on Netflix. Like, yeah, we had a house guest that was there for, like, I'm like, what do these people do? Just living in houses that aren't theirs. But anyway, but I just feel like that's the civilians. It's like, it's just the ultimate house guest. Like, I'm just on the starship, and then I, you know.
Well,
move on,
it's,
I guess.
It's also interesting how, I mean, I often forget that, like, this is not just the flagship, but it's, you know, it's a galaxy class ship, meaning there's families and there's, you know, visiting dignitaries, and there's, like, it's not a battleship. It's not just Starfleet just getting the job done. Like, you have a lot of civilians. And yeah, I think Ben is a great part of this episode, and I mean, obviously, it makes, when you think about it, it makes sense that he's in 10 forward, because there's only so many sets, guys, and, like, that's one of the major sets that's not, you know, engineering. But yeah, it's interesting, and yeah, you have more risk, I guess. It's the flagship. It's going to be in more battles and more danger, and crazy stuff happens. You know, maybe his bunk is in that section that the Borg pulled out, like a, you know, cross section, but you also get to see the galaxy, and, you know, it's, if the risks are worth the reward.
I have to wonder, starting the episode, and I don't know the answer, and I'm sure it's in some technical manual, how does the Enterprise calendar work? In other words, are they operating off of, I mean, I know it's in space, but, you know, conceptually, are they,
they're called star dates, 12, Philip? I don't,
well,
know,
like a 12 month year. Well, like, in other words, they say, like, oh, it's been 3 months since our crew evaluation. So I'm thinking to myself, you're doing crew evaluations very often.
Yeah,
I mean, like, if I'm, like, once a quarter.
That's why they have so many officers. Fine. A lot of evaluating to do.
I was thinking, if you section it off, maybe that's why you do it every 2 months.
Oh, so, like, you have, like, a January batch and a March batch, but they're not
exactly
the same people. That
just
makes
do a
more
through
sense.
C or something.
Look, there is one commander on this whole dang ship, Philip. So, obviously, that's what they have to do.
Well, Riker was just like, let's promote everyone.
Yeah, he was done. He was over it.
Which I was.
He's like, this doesn't even get me a built set for my office. I have to do this in 10 forward. 10 freaking forward.
Well, Deanna will only meet him in public places.
Oh.
I was in my fan group on the Bonaventure. We were talking about exo duties, because we were talking about whether they, like, but anyway, this shows, like, this is what an exo does. Like, literally, an exo would be doing the HR stuff, which is, you know, necessary, but boring. And so I'm like, that's always, I think, a trouble with exos.
It's like
on
touching,
Star Trek series.
Touching the pads, like, hey, Strange New Worlds, paperwork.
Which I think it's always a trouble with making exos, not the character, but the position interesting. Like,
right,
how do you make Chakotay interesting as an
how
exo?
Do you how make Chakotay interesting, guys?
I didn't.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically like the vice president. You're just waiting to take over the big chair at any given moment. You know, have any real duty.
Yeah.
I know, when Data became EXO, everything seemed to go great. So maybe that you just need the right android for the job.
I like now, the mundanity in that, though. I like seeing that sort of stuff. And when you have super episodic, like, content, it's difficult to see that sometimes. Like, we get slivers of it. But I like that the episode spends like 25 minutes in the nothingness in the, this is not, oh my God, a whole planet's going to explode. Right. It does. It only
kind of like, was it Data's Day or I can't remember the one where you get just a lot of like everyday off time stuff. Yeah.
And I think this one, because I think, you know, as diehard fans, we always nitpick and have questions on how the world works. But I think this one answers something that you may often think about if you're a super nerd, is like when they have meetings, who's in charge? Like who's, you know,
no one.
The entire bridge crew leaves. But I like it in this one. You actually have like, oh, take over this station, take over that station. You know, they're leaving. And it's just,
but
like,
nobody was in the chair. Like nobody was in command. It did feel a little weird, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, is there a whole like cafeteria on deck two where they just have a whole bunch of people sitting
there?
And so when Picard's like, you know, Riker, Data, off you go, and then they're like beep beep beep. You know, the light lights up on the big panel next to him, and they're like, we did a replacement for ops, and you know, and then they get to the turbo lift and go pew, pew, up really fast so that when they step up, like instantly someone steps in into that chair. Like there is not a moment wasted.
I do
like even the reverse. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I think the idea is that the ship is smart enough to run itself.
There's so much automation. Yeah.
But I feel like even like Lavelle's like, hey Commander Riker, can I do another shift? And it's like, isn't there someone already scheduled, like, coming? You know,
that's true.
This isn't like Target. You just like, can I do another?
He's like, I don't want you tied. Maybe again, Riker's totally right. But, you know, Lavelle's, he's trying. He's trying really hard.
Yeah, I did like the identifying characters, you know, how they reflect other ones, you know.
Yeah.
Troy and is it just Troy? I felt like someone else is poking him, maybe. Will about Lavelle being just like him.
Yeah.
Right.
Geordi was a jerk in this episode. Like a real big jerk. I mean, Picard was too, but that was for a reason. Geordi was just kind of like, even Riker was kind of in the wrong, but not like egregiously so. Like he was understandable and he was.
One eye is sufficient, Daniel.
Well, that might have been a little harsh. But Geordi was like, no, get your stupid, awesome idea out of here to make everything better. I'll just figure it out myself.
But at the end...
Yes, of course. He learned his lesson, but that was kind of quick, I felt.
Well, it's a Barclay situation, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, but he's...
Yeah, in Geordi's defense, he gets stuck with the annoying crew. I mean, let's be honest.
It
Gomez,
does happen a lot. The Travelers
Barclay.
Down there... It's all the weird woods. They do stuff from engineering.
It's just because they're engineers, which I accept that as an explanation.
This guy wasn't being annoying. He was just right. So it feels like he's just being mean to be vindictive. I don't know. It's just, to me, it just came off as like, Geordi's being a dick, man. Why is he so mean?
Accept social cues, Torek. When I say you have any other suggestions, it doesn't mean right now.
He asks him. But
he asks me, and I shall have him.
Now, I know this is how great this episode is. My wife Jessica's watching this with me. She did have a moment where I'm trying to remember when this happened. Maybe it's when they're at the Lavelle and
Cito,
Bajoran.
Cito,
are at the Cito or at the front part, you know.
Oh, sorry, no, not
Con. Or maybe it's at the table, but it's a part where, like, we have to nurse the tender male ego. She's like, well, maybe I just need more practice. Jessica's like, yep, that's right. Make sure you look like you don't know how to do anything to make him feel better. That's what we do in this world.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
I mean, it's 94. I mean, I'm not defending it, but
I'm sure this is all male written, too.
So I want to talk about...
Story by Ron and Jean-Louis.
Interesting. I want to talk about the poker stuff, because there's a lot of interesting things going on here. And first of all, I was watching with my girlfriend, and she said, Troy shouldn't be allowed to play poker. And I said, Troy shouldn't be allowed to play poker. Geordi shouldn't be allowed to play poker. Data should not be allowed to play poker.
So they
and
all
Will
did
still
they
wins.
All get ahead?
Like, and the white man all, still wins.
Did they all get together and did they agree, like, let's just not use our abilities? It's like the mutants, like, playing poker. It's like,
yeah,
no.
But you can't not hear things, right?
We agreed no powers.
You can't not hear stuff. So presumably, Troy can't just turn off her empathetic abilities. Like, how do you... You can't just ignore that. She's not, like, plugging
well, see, Riker,
empathy holes.
But Riker sets up, like, an emo rock band right below their quarters every time that they play to flood her mental power. I don't know. I thought in one episode that they've said they've lined the cards with, like, some material that his visor can't see through.
I don't remember that.
Talking counting cards, Data should be able to tell you really well, like, what the probability is of
He couldn't turn himself off, though, so theoretically there's an argument there.
That's true.
He could have a poker subroutine.
He would have to have a subroutine. That'd be interesting. A fair play subroutine? That would
fair
be,
play subroutine.
It's ethical subroutine. Under that, there's a sub-subroutine for poker.
Called, I Want to Still Have Friends. And
I guess Worf would probably just eat the cards, huh? Right? But maybe not. There's this really...
Worf's really tactical. Like, I mean, again...
If you will.
It's weird that it's poker. I mean, I don't know what else it would be, but like you said, like, three of the people are pretty much disqualified, just not the human normals, you know?
I wanted to just talk about it because... There's a scene halfway through when the senior staff are playing poker and the junior staff are playing poker, and it does this really neat editing stuff where it's like it just keeps swapping, like, mid conversation. It's one big flowing sort of thing, and it's like
big flowing and talking between the two. But
and
it's done well, yeah.
I thought it was great, and it's a wonderfully written scene as well, because it's like showing both the similarities and the differences between these two groups. And obviously, all the senior staff learn their lesson from the ladies at the table. And the junior staff, they all grow courage to go out into the world and do the things they need to do. Except Sito, who gets her own scene for that. But I just thought it was great. I thought the editing was cool, that it kept going back and forth between those two groups. It was something I'd forgotten about.
And yeah, I think also... Scene. Expanded the world, not only in our crew, but in some ways in our greater universe, because in the real world it'd be an A plot, but here it's the B plot with a Cardassian. But like, we meet a Cardassian that we a new kind of Cardassian. You know, this is seventh season, so we're like second season DS9. So like, you know, Gul Dukat or the other Cardassian that they're all bad guys, you know, or Gul Evec, or, you know, Gul, you know, whatever, the tortured Picard, they're all bad. And we get a quote-unquote good Cardassian, right? So that's a little different. It's sort of creating that larger world and all races aren't the same, so that was, you know, it's small. But...
Well, and in a lot of the novels, not the ones that are set for, like, the... They've kind of rewritten, you know, it for Picard and stuff like that. But the novel verse, I guess, that's been going on for TNG, there's a Cardassian Helms officer through most of it, Glenn Deegan. And it's a really well-written character. So we even had that past-future episode where there's a Cardassian helmsman with the awesome badges. But it can happen, guys.
The Bajoran... Cardassian stuff is subtle and it's low key in this episode. Obviously there's the couple of exchanges between the two, but it's not,
DS9 is going on by now, right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
right.
Season 7.
Yeah.
Cause I was trying to explain it to my girlfriend. She's like, well, when they beamed them aboard, right, and they played the ominous music.
Like, and she's like, who's that?
Like, what is
like, Dr. Gray darkness? Yeah.
It's a Cardassian. She's like, what does that mean? I'm like, they're not at war.
They're
kind of
space
friendly
Nazis.
it's complicated. But he's a good guy, right? He's not shown to at any point be nefarious or evil. He says he doesn't consider himself a traitor. So yeah, it's good stuff. Good stuff for sure.
So, you know, I don't know if we would ever do a whole episode about her, but Nurse Ogawa, we mentioned, is someone who we know, sort of like not Miles O'Brien of TNG. You know, someone who we see a lot.
Right, that's true.
That's something we know a lot about. But we
she has a name. She has...
Yep. You know, we know eventually she gets married. We know she eventually gets pregnant.
What if they had used... Lieutenant Jay. Oh, I guess she's a little too high because she'd been a lieutenant.
She was here. Episode. She was in the episode.
Yeah. But I mean, as a primary character for this.
A lot of talk.
That's what happens when you get promoted.
But yeah, I like how Ogawa learns that she's promoted first, but we don't actually ever get to see her promoted. I mean, I'm sure in other subsequent episodes. Yep. But.
Yeah, that's true. There was no, like, why would they? Yeah, if she would have presumably got promoted at the same exact time that Lavelle got promoted,
oh,
right?
Yeah. She should have been like here and then let me do mine and yours.
Yeah, interesting. That's a good point.
Sorry, guys. We got to sit at a different table now. So
lieutenants only.
So does she get her own room now, or is it medical personnel?
That's true. Well, because you have one medical, one science, or one. There's no science, though.
Let's, yep. Why would you?
But
I like how.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I like how, because they don't have to do this, and they often don't, of explaining an inconsistency that we see, and we're like, well, why would you do that? You know, where you have Cito, who's a security officer, being recommended for ops, which seems like,
right.
If you're a nerd like me, like, that doesn't make sense. But then they explain that in the episode. Yes, it doesn't make sense, but Worf recommended her for this transfer.
Well, and Worf, you know, Worf should know. I mean, he went from ops to security. He went the other way.
Then he went back.
But do you still know how to fire phasers?
Ops.
That's in the future, so we don't need to talk about that.
Well, because in the Data Dies episode, Worf gets promoted to ops.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
was he ever ops or was he con?
He was...
It was a few times sat there.
In Encounter, he was...
It's all pre-Yash Tasha Yar.
They were swapped in the beginning, weren't they? The two
stations? that's what's throwing me off. Yeah. It's because he was just. But anyway.
Yeah, he was sitting in a data seat, but he was Khan.
He was actually, if you want to. I'm not saying I'm canon when I say this, but I'm saying he was mission ops.
Mm.
Like, that's what he was always at behind Tasha.
No, but I remember him seeing sometimes sitting in the front, one of the front two seats with Geordi. No. Because that would have been Data. I don't know. Season
well,
one,
know what,
TNG, guys. It's just...
It's a good point I wanted to talk about, too, was the relationship between Cito and Worf. And I thought it was... Like, obviously, this is the only time we see them, but I really bought into it. I thought it was pretty emotional, and, like, it felt natural. Like, it was a real... Like, he was mentoring her, kind of like a, you know... I don't know if I'd say father, maybe a big brother. I don't know, but, like, a... You know, just mentoring. He was being a mentor. That's what he was. And he was recommending her, and he had her back when they were talking. He was talking to Riker privately during the poker match, and he even somehow learned about the conversation she had with Picard. And I wonder if Picard encouraged him to talk to her about that. But anyways,
it's a small ship, Daniel. It gets around pretty quick,
around.
These things.
But he has this great. He drops some truth bombs on her, like in the middle of jujitsu. You know, and it. He's. He can be a pretty capable leader, and it's definitely shown here.
Well, I think it.
I think it's key you said leader, not father, Daniel.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. But it does highlight where Worf's character kind of goes with DS9, like switching back to command and making decisions. Like, it just continues on his character. You know, we just see a little bit of that growth here in this episode.
Yeah, because I think that's the thing. I mean, not just TNG, but any of the episodes or any of the series, we don't often see staffs for these departments. Like, presumably, Tuvok has a staff, and you know,
right. He talks about it all the time.
I mean, we see the episode where Wesley is put over a staff, but we don't see our main characters get that very often.
Like, they should be having their own little meetings, you know.
Although we
see
a lot with Geordi, though. I'd say Geordi's the exception because
like gets his own set, so it helps.
Yeah, that helps. Everybody get around the pool table. Around the pool table. Let's
now, to be sure, Darren, he did not have any staff when he first started Chief and Engineer. There's usually just two people on that staff, if I remember that set correctly.
But you know, the chief engineer is in and out so often. Like, why get committed to a staff?
Just if you leave chief engineering, just turn off the lights though, if you're trying to save.
Well, that's true. And like, if Counselor Troy is a bridge officer, then she must have a staff. Like
counseling staff? I mean, I don't know if she does or not. Like, she may not.
Yo. That's, well, she cannot possibly be responsible for the mental health of 1,000 people. That seems
well,
ridiculous.
You say that.
No, but there's where when she loses her empathic ability in that one episode, I think they talk about like other people will take over kind of her duties for a while because she feels like she can't do anything without that ability. So it does imply that there is other counseling nurses or something on the ship.
Because, I mean, and again, Starfleet's different. But, like, from an army perspective, when I was in, and I know these words will mean nothing, but, like, at a brigade level, which is, like, a full-bird colonel, like, that's who's in charge of a brigade, like, that's where your specialty staff, like, your chaplains, your JAG attorneys, like, that's the level. And they're, like, that's for the whole brigade. There's just one of those. So that's why it would not surprise me if you just had one counselor for the ship.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, you know, I was just thinking too about Lower Decks, the show now.
Wait. So then, when there's a magic or a giant traumatic event, does she just walk in and go, you're now counselors. Come with me.
The detail, no.
I was just thinking that, like, during this conversation about Lower Decks, the show, and there's some sort of, you know, things that we kind of shake off as well, you know, budget. Or, you know, it would have been too difficult to do that. A lot of interesting opportunities that we can see with something like an animated show, like talking about getting all those extras would be probably prohibitively expensive.
There's apparently a zombie episode, which is like a ton of makeup and budget and stuff that
right.
they do.
You can,
a main shuttle bay.
We'll get to see the main shuttle bay, that kind of sort of stuff. But like, there's interesting little cracks that they can fill in our Star Trek lore that we wouldn't normally get to see. Maybe they can do that. Like, so they can show. Oh, there's 50, whatever. I mean, whatever, however many.
Yeah,
it is, 15.
There's 25 shuttles in the shuttle bay. Yeah. Oh, look, let's just pan over there, and everyone's like, we can see it.
So that'd be.
By the way, this is Lower Decks, guys. So we're only going to see shuttle bay C.
I don't know. The comparing to the Cerritos, looks like it has one shuttle bay. Like that's it. There's no other. There's no secondary hull.
Yeah, so what else did we... Okay, I wanted to talk about Cito and the ending. It's very sad, and it makes me a little mad that they killed her off, because I think she was really compelling and interesting. Not that they could really do much with her at this point, obviously, because the show is 8 episodes away from ending, but they could have brought her back in Deep Space Nine. Or later on.
That's true, and they don't, like, she's dead, but she's off-screen dead.
Presumed missing.
Yeah.
I wonder if she ever came back in any novels. Are you guys aware?
Something tells me yes, but I don't know that.
I think she did.
Deep Space Nine novel. I don't know that for a fact.
I'm trying to find it up.
You Section 31 the whole time. I don't know.
I see Nova Squadron incident. She was a member of Nova Squadron.
And I love that continuity, because they don't actually say. I mean, like, if you had never seen the episode, you would have gotten the gist of it. And if you had seen the episode, you know. It was a happy medium with that.
Interesting. There was a game, I guess it's a game, called Star Trek Starship Creator.
Yeah, I'm familiar with
it. Okay, well, are you? It was, and apparently it was written by. Mike and Denise Okuda, which I didn't know. In that game, it states that she was rescued.
Play.
Yeah, in Memory Alpha, though, it's saying she died in 2370. Deceased Kilaye. So, according to Memory Alpha, she'd be dead.
Yeah. Anyways, it's a very effective death. I was very sad. And it works really well for the episode. I just was sad that we weren't going to see any more, because I thought she... It was really compelling to watch, and I thought like wrapping up what we had seen in the other episode, the Nick Locarno episode,
First Duty
was great. It was really good. It was, and I mean, she fought for her, you know, fought for her way to be there and stuff, and then it's just like, it's a gut punch.
Daniel, how many Bajorans did 7th season of TNG take?
at least one more, I guess.
But I like this. I mean, this is a really good episode because, you know, I'm sort of in the writer frame of mind these days. It's very balanced. Like, it's a lot of heart. You have that sadness at the end, but you have a lot of jokes in the middle. Tonally, it's very even between drama and comedy. I mean, it's just a well-done episode. Again, like I said, with the pairing, the parallels, like you said, with the poker, you have Lavelle bluffing and losing. You have Will bluffing and winning. He's not bluffing. He actually has the cards he says. Yeah, and so there's all sorts of stuff going on. It's just a really good story.
Yeah, again, reading a little more in Memory Alpha, it looks like they realized kind of what they had with that actress and that character, and they wanted to bring her back, but it just never happened, and there wasn't enough time in TNG, and it didn't really develop in Deep Space Nine. But hey,
they don't have another
Voyager
series.
Could bring those Ferengi back. So we got them. We closed that loophole, guys. I'm happy about that.
I don't say they didn't have enough time. Like, if only we had another series that's like dedicated to Bajor.
You know, thinking about it, and knowing that we talked a little bit about what Mike McMahon said about how he's a big TNG guy, I'm thinking now what opportunities for characters like this that could have been lost or whatever, what threads will be picked up that we might be surprised.
Yeah, because I have, and I say this in a good way, I have no expectations for Lower Decks. So, you know, it's going to be fun, and that's all I'm looking for. Like, I don't need for there to be any recurring characters to come back. I mean, it's great, but like, I'm not looking for that.
Right.
But it would be interesting if they do that. So.
That's true. And if it's just post-Nemesis, are we going to deal with Romulans at all? And like, I mean, there was some sort of Romulan hologram thing going on in the trailer. It's hard to tell. Like, they had boxes over their eyes. But I'm thinking it was like a training program of some kind.
Yeah, because the tactical guy, is that a chosen thing over his eye, or is that a...
I think from the little blurb is like he's always on the cutting edge of technology, so I feel like he kind of did that to stay ahead of the game. I don't know. It seems voluntary.
Zeroes in on the board.
Yeah.
Well, we've seen it. I mean, we've seen that piece of equipment used by the Dominion, so...
But I feel like this is like hardwired into his head.
Maybe. We don't know. I guess we don't know.
That's true. I didn't think
maybe
of
he's related to Miriam.
The Dominion ones.
Oh, you know.
So
he could just be a big Garrus fan from Mass Effect, but
whatever. Oh, wow.
Or watch Dragon Ball Z, where they got the little
power level. And he would actually say at some point it's over 9,000. Yes, of course. Yeah, so I love this episode. Sounds like you guys really enjoyed it too. And I think we're all looking forward to Lower Decks, the show. And hopefully it can maintain the quality and reputation of the excellent, excellent TNG episode. And if not, we still have that episode. And it's fantastic. You have any final thoughts, guys, you wanted to say before we close it out?
Is the reason... So when, at the end of the episode, and of course, Cito passes away, presumably, Listen and Lavelle both get promoted. So, is the reason that Tork changed his name because he never got promoted and never saw that he's going to get ahead under Geordi, so he transferred to the Voyager and changed
his
name?
They all think Vulcans look alike. They won't tell.
Why not just make it the same character? It's got to be a rights thing.
How there's a reverse... This is like a cursed Kevin Bacon, because you go from First Duty... Right, and you have those characters, and you go where Locarno changes his name. Then you go to this episode, Lower Decks, where Cito is the same person, but then we introduce Torek, and then Torek changes his name in Blood Fever. Blood Fever was our character who later appeared as a different character to create this curse.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's the same thing, like the whole Nick Locarno, you know, Tom Paris thing.
Mordok.
Where they didn't want to pay for Torek's for the right. I don't know. It's weird. I'm sure it's something like that.
Yeah.
But
I will say it was my final thought. It was very refreshing and felt like going back home seeing, I guess we'd call him classic Picard at this point. It was nice. I wanted you here. And you know, like that.
Sorry to hear that your Academy experience wasn't fun.
Yeah, that was nice. That little burn. Darren, what about you? Any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I'd say a great episode. I mean, I think, was this one of the five in the TNG fan favorite from the end of Next Gen?
Hosted by Jonathan Frakes.
Hosted by Jonathan Frakes. I'm trying to remember now. What the heck was that? It had like the longest freaking title. It's like the Star Trek fan favorite. It was like in 93. I don't know if I'm gonna be able to pull it up fast enough. But
I can't imagine.
I don't think it was. I think it was Yesterday's Enterprise, Best of Both Worlds 1 and 2, Relics.
Inner Light wasn't in there? I would be shocked if Inner Light wasn't in there.
It might have been. I can't remember. But yeah, the more I think about it, I don't think it was Lower Decks. They were like, hey, you could have seen that 8 weeks ago, so this can't be your favorite yet. But no, but I would just say, you know, watch this episode before watching Lower Decks the show. Not that you have to, but it really is going to get you in the mood, because it's a great concept that I'm excited is becoming a show.
Yeah, and it won't be long, just a few weeks until we can start talking about it. So I'm looking forward to it, and hope we have a good time, for sure, on the USS Cerritos.
Cerritos.
Right? I just feel like it's a brand of, like...
It does sound like that. I'm thinking Cheetos in my mind, yeah, for sure. All right, well, that's it for this week. We'll catch you next week. I'm Daniel Prue.
I'm Philip Kelfis.
And I'm Darren Moser.
Stranded here on SETI Alpha 3. Live action SETI Alpha 3 for only a limited time.